People are thinking, but it's a loan. Don't you have to pay it back? No, not in this situation. So you have to pay the interest on it, and you always have to pay the interest, but it doesn't mean you ever have to pay the principal down. Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate Podcast. I'm your host, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak, and today we've got a pretty cool episode for you, continuing our discussion on personal finance. So yesterday we released an episode talking about how just by selecting one bank account over another bank account, it can lead to life-changing results over the course of a lifetime, and just starting to pay a little bit of attention to your personal finances. So today we want to extend that conversation a little bit further to talk about a little bit more complex topics, but again, could have some profound impacts on one's life. Greg, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so this stems from actually a Facebook post that I saw, which I'm not usually on Facebook anymore. All right, so let me actually pull up the post if I can still find it, because it gets to the heart of the reason I want to have this conversation. There we go. All right, so somebody on the White Coat Investor Facebook group says, I need a large sum of money for an expense and I don't have the cash on hand. Could I just sell a fair bit of my VTI in my brokerage account if it's had minimal gain, less than 1%? I don't imagine I would have to pay a large amount of capital gains tax. Are there any issues with doing something like this I am not aware of? Thanks.
Greg, let me just give a little bit of extra context here. So what is VTI? That is one of the Vanguard S&P 500 index funds. I think it's Total Market Index Fund, actually. So what this is, you can buy an ETF like you would buy Apple stock or Google stock or anything like that. But what it is a collection of hundreds, if not thousands, of the biggest, most well-known companies in the country. So it is a very well-diversified thing. A lot of people look at this as a great way to park your capital that you're not going to need for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, where you basically grow with the American economy. But it is a good investment to have. Like historically, it's returned, depending on your time frame that you're looking at, somewhere between 8 and 12% every single year. When something is compounding at that rate, you can get fantastic results. That's great. And with only a 1% gain or so, they probably haven't been holding it for too long. So just starting off with that initial question of, can I sell this off? Yeah, this is America. You can do whatever you want. Sure, you can sell it off. But is it really the best thing that one can really do for oneself? I think that's the question we really want to get to.
Yeah, so my response to him was, so one thing that I've been doing now that we actually have some capital to play around with is we put, I don't know, maybe 50% of the sales price, the cash sales price of the company into a brokerage account, and we diversified in other ways, which we can talk about later. But one of the things that I came across was something called a securities-backed line of credit. What that means is basically you can borrow against your own brokerage account. So let's take some examples, because this becomes a lot easier to understand when you actually start thinking about real numbers. Let's say that you have $2 million in this account and you have, maybe it's all in ETFs, so VTI, QQ, VOL, like whatever they are. What you can do with these brokerage accounts is borrow up to a certain percentage of that account, depending on where you have your brokerage account parked. So in ETFs, it's usually around like 70% basically loan to value of that account that you can pull out. I don't recommend getting to that point, but my point is, instead of selling off stocks, so for this example, I don't know exactly how much the guy needed to sell in order to cover whatever the cost was, but let's say it's a $200,000 purchase that this person needs to make. Maybe they're buying a rental house and they need the down payment. My thought is, why not just borrow against your brokerage account instead of taking that stock out of the stock market? When you think about where we are right now in the market, hopefully we're still rattling along the bottom of this depression, recession, whatever you want to call it. Because if you take it out, even if it's for a month or two, and you miss some of these days where the stock market pops and goes up 1 or 2 or 3%, you're missing out on a lot of potential growth. My other point being, there's tax advantages into why people would borrow against their brokerage account. So in my own personal example, in my own personal life, we came across this idea of something called buy, borrow, die. What that means is basically instead of selling your stocks within your brokerage account, you borrow against them. And the beautiful thing is they're an interest-only payment. So technically, you never have to actually pay the entire principal back from these loans. So there is no like mortgage where you think, okay, we have a 30-year payback period or something like that. It's literally forever. So if I take out that $200,000 for my brokerage account, again, let's say we have $2 million in the account, and let's say that your monthly payment on that is $1,500 a month or something like that, which actually, maybe we'll do the actual calculation. Rodak, do you want to calculate what would $200,000 borrowed against your own brokerage account at, let's say, 6% interest rate right now, since the interest rates went up. The beautiful thing again is you do not have to pay this off. So why the heck would you do this? So going back to the idea of this buy, borrow, die concept. So the concept is you have $2 million in your brokerage account. You borrow the $200,000 from your own brokerage. And basically you're paying that interest rate. And say you never pay any of the principal down. So in 45 years, when you're, let's say in 45 years you die, you still have $200,000 in that loan. And that's the only loan you ever take out against your brokerage account. And now, let's say that with compounding, your brokerage account grows to $40 million. So if you have kids, what you can do, this is the die part, is you actually transfer that brokerage account to them upon your death, which means they get a step up basis and valuation of that account. So instead of paying the capital gains on the $2 million that you had all the way up to the $40 million, so let's say it's $38 million in capital gains that you ultimately see at the end of your life, they would only pay capital gains on anything that goes above $40 million. So going back to that loan, now when your child gets your brokerage account with $40 million in it, which would be amazing to have that as basically be the generational wealth that you can pass off to your kids can decide to pay off that loan. So let's say they sell $200,000 worth of stock on day one when they get that brokerage account. They don't pay any capital gains tax on that. So they're paying off your debt from 40 years ago, which helped you buy a vacation rental or whatever it is that you're using it for. And that child no longer has your debt, but now has $39,800,000 in the brokerage account instead of $40 million. And they're only paying capital gains from then on out. So that is how the rich stay rich. That is how you can use your brokerage account to your advantage. Ronak, questions, thoughts on this?
Greg, so I think getting a chance to live like a Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk sounds a little bit interesting to see what kind of like back-end strategies that they're actually doing and see how us normal people can leverage some of those same strategies. I have a lot of questions here. I think this is a very important topic and a very important episode that it makes sense to just delve into a little bit of the details. Greg, what you're saying is that folks can take out a loan in a different kind of way than what maybe most people are used to. So the type of loans that people are probably used to are everything from student loans to credit card debt to mortgages. So let's talk about those real quick. When you're taking out a student loan, you're basically going to the government or some entity like that and saying, hey, I want to go get educated for the next couple of years. My salary will probably increase. Give me a loan to pay tuition. You go through school, you get the job, and then you have to slowly pay back those loans over time. Credit card debt, right? And if you establish good credit over the last few years or whatever it is, maybe the credit card company will give you a loan for $50,000 and you can put whatever you want on your credit card as long as you pay it back at the end of every month. Mortgage, you're basically going to the bank and saying, hey, I already have this job, right? So let me borrow $1 million to live in this house. And in return, I'm going to pay you interest payments every single month. That's going to be taken out of my salary, basically going straight to you. So what you're talking about here is taking out a loan where what's backing up the loan is a brokerage account filled with stocks and bonds and different assets like that. And the interest that you're paying is not necessarily tied to how the stock does, but it's basically tied to like how interest rates are moving over time. So right now we've seen interest rates have gone up over the last few months quite dramatically. It's conceivable that the interest rates could go down over the next 5 years, right? Which means that maybe you take out a loan today, like in your example, you have a $2 million brokerage account, you take out a loan, maybe you're paying 6% right now, but that interest rate could change to 10%, or it could change to 2%. So how do you think about that variable interest rate? Is that something to be very worried about? Are you relatively okay about it? Maybe this comes back to the whole idea that, like, don't take out 70% of your brokerage account and only take out 20%. But how do you think about that variability of the interest that you're going to be paying for this loan?
Yeah, so I think this comes back to the concept of what are you using this loan that you're taking out basically against your own stocks. So the more common example of something that's very similar to this would be a HELOC. So a home equity line of credit. It's the same thing, but actually nicer with a brokerage because you never have to pay it back. With a HELOC, I think you actually have to pay it back after 10 years or something like that. I need to actually look into that. But with the brokerage account, yes, it's a variable interest rate. Let's go through the actual practical aspects of getting one of these accounts, and then I can go into kind of how I think about the variable interest rate. So I had a brokerage account at Wells Fargo. And when I first heard of this concept of the, so it's called different things at different banks. At Schwab, which is where I ultimately landed, it's called the pledged asset line. At other banks, it's called the securities-backed line of credit. But when I started finding out of this concept, I started doing my own research and figured out which one of these brokerage accounts actually has the best interest rate spread. And so the way that these asset lines work is they have some kind of index that they tie their interest rate to. So at Schwab, it's the SOFR, the SOFR rate, which is the secured overnight financing rate, which basically follows what the Fed is doing in terms of what interest rates look like. And then for the bank, the way that they make money is they have an interest rate spread. And so that spread can be anywhere from 4.6, 4.7% all the way down to 1.9. So the beautiful thing is you as the consumer, let's say you do have that 2 million or 3 million in your brokerage account at Wells Fargo, you can go look around and negotiate with these people. That's the thing that other people I don't think realize is that a brokerage firm wants the cash in their accounts. That's how they make money. That's how, you know, the sales folks make money. So you can actually negotiate with these people and say, I see, and I have Schwab's pledged asset line pulled up right now. So they have their interest rate spread, the best available interest rate spread that they have publicly available is 1.90% plus the SOFR. I negotiated with them and saying, hey, I have my brokerage with Wells Fargo. Can you guys do anything better than the interest rate spread that I see on your online platform? And they said, yes, let me go to our underwriters and see what we're able to do. I got mine down to 1.25% interest rate spread. So I lost, 65.65%, something like that, if I'm doing the math correctly. So that ends up being a nice thing because 1.25% interest rate spread plus the SOFR, basically that, the way that I thought about that was it's likely going to always be below what interest rates for a traditional 30-year mortgage would be, based off of what I was seeing when I initially got the account. Now, when I initially got the account, I think I was paying like 3.75% interest on my brokerage account that I pulled out. Now it's more like 6% interest rate. So that goes back to Ronak's question of like, how do you feel about this floating interest rate? I would only use this pledged asset line to buy assets. So cash flowing assets. I think this is one of the most important things that I can possibly say when you're thinking about using this pledged asset line. I would not use this to go out and buy a nice car. I would not use this to buy a primary home. I would use this to buy something that I know is going to ultimately make money, even up to crazy interest rates like Ronak talked about with 10%, right? And there's other kind of financial gymnastics that you can do to figure out how do I pay that interest rate down using your brokerage account still, which we can go into later. But the way that I think about this is I need to buy a cash flowing asset that I think is going to cash flow very quickly so that I can cover that interest rate payment plus more. So if I think that I'm able to do better than what the 6% interest rate is right now in other investments, you're damn right I'm going to pull that money out and not have to sell my own stock in order to do something. Because again, when you look at a compounding interest calculator, right? If we take out $400,000 from your $2 million account and you look at it, the difference between $2 million compounding for 40 years versus $1.6 million compounding for 40 years, it ends up being a big difference. But that's the way that I think about it is if you're not buying something that's going to cash flow. So if you haven't listened to or read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you need to read or listen to that book to start to understand assets versus liabilities. I would never use this for a liability. I would only use it if you know that you're ultimately going to make money on this new investment that you're using it for.
So Greg, I'm not a fan of paying taxes. You should just make that a clip right there. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I'm not a fan of paying taxes. I don't think you are either. What's really interesting about this example that you have, right? So somebody has a $2 million brokerage account. They want to take out $200,000 to pay a down payment on a house. Right now, if you go down the traditional route of selling off some of that $2 million in assets to get that $200,000 to pay for that down payment, you actually have to sell off more than $200,000 to cover the taxes, assuming that there's been growth in your brokerage account, which hopefully there is, right? So that means you're not selling off $200,000. You're probably selling off maybe $300,000, maybe $400,000 worth of stock, depending on which state you're in and what type of assets you're selling off, just to get that $200,000. Versus if you pull $200,000 with this asset line back of credit, you're getting that in a much more efficient way from a tax perspective.
Yeah, just to go back to the tax perspective too, but first I actually did the calculation. So if you had $2 million in your account and you left that $2 million in there for 4 years, so let's say until you pass away and you pass it off to your child, I was pretty close. It's $43.45 million that you would have in that account. And the variables that I put in were an 8% estimated interest rate, which is, I think, about right for the S&P 500 historically. And we left it in there for 40 years. So you're looking at $43.5 million. Keep that number in mind. If you pull that $400,000 out to do that down payment on a nice house in California or Florida, wherever it is, your resultant brokerage account in that at that 40-year mark goes down to $34.7 million. So it's about a $9 million difference between if you were to just take out a loan for yourself versus if you sold those stocks. So that's the thing that you need to think about. And again, if your child is paying that $400,000 off, think about your children, right? Like, you want to give them the most opportunity in the future. So instead of having 43.5 million minus the 400,000, so 43.1 million, by taking out that 400,000, selling that stock, you're going to get them basically, it's going to be $9 million less that you're giving them ultimately in the end at the 40-year mark. In terms of taxes, this is actually tax advantaged. The reason being, any loan that you take out, you actually pay the interest. And guess what? That's tax deductible. So when you're filing your taxes next year and you're saying, oh yeah, I forgot about that loan that I took out. I paid, $25,000 in interest payments. Boom, you put that in as a tax deductible.
That tax deductible aspect. Let's just double click on that real quick. So let's say, again, in this example, you took out $200,000, roughly 6%-ish, that comes out to around $1,000 per month that you're paying, right? So if you can deduct $1,000 per month, so $12,000 over the course of the year, and you're a physician making a relatively good income, you're deducting maybe close to half of that, right? So basically, if you think about it from an after-tax perspective, right, the interest rate that you're paying is actually not 6%. It's actually maybe closer to 4%.
The other thing you should think about too is if you sold that stock and you had to pay either short-term or long-term capital gains, what is the difference now in taxes? So if you sold $200,000 or $400,000 worth of stock that, oh God, it went up 10% between the time that I bought it and the time that I sold it, now how much are you actually paying in taxes? That might be, maybe you're paying $35,000, $40,000, something like that, versus you're getting a tax deduction by borrowing against it. It's crazy to think that people like a Jeff Bezos or an Elon Musk, this is how they do it, right? So Jeff Bezos has, I don't know how much in actual Amazon stock he still has, but he's for sure not selling it. He's not selling his stocks, right? He's borrowing against his stocks. So when he goes out and buys a new mega yacht, I guarantee you he's not converting his stock into cash because it makes absolutely no sense from a tax perspective, which is also why people get so pissed off when they see that millionaires and billionaires are paying such a low tax rate. But it's because they do not make income. They have stock and they just borrow against it. And it's not taxed. That is the crazy thing. Like when you create a loan, there's no tax that you're paying on that. There's not. There's an interest rate that you pay for the actual loan, but there's no tax, even though it's basically income for you, right? So if you, again, take the 200,000 out, you're not paying ordinary income on that. You're not paying capital gains on that. You're paying nothing. It's literally just your interest rate. So if you figure I'm going to go use this to buy an asset, it makes total sense to borrow against your brokerage rather than selling stock. I don't understand why not a lot of people know about this. It's insane.
So Greg, you mentioned the book Rich Dad Poor Dad earlier by Robert Kiyosaki. We'll leave a link to that to the Amazon page in the show notes. But this is a really interesting book. If anybody knows the author and wants to get him on the podcast, we'd actually really appreciate that. That would be amazing to talk to him. But Greg, can you maybe just like double click on what the difference between an asset and a liability is and how that ties into what might make sense purchasing with this type of loan and what doesn't make sense to purchase with this loan and why?
So the way I think about assets and liabilities is in my own life, I don't know if this is the actual definition, but for assets, it's basically anything that I think ultimately is going to appreciate over time, as well as potentially give me basically cash flow in the meantime. So the beautiful thing that I think about is short-term rentals, right? Mostly the brokerage account that I've used kind of this loan for is to go out and actually purchase homes. So that's one of the ways that we've diversified our portfolio is going out and buying short-term rentals. We just bought one in the Adirondacks that we're getting up and running. The beautiful thing about short-term rentals is, again, there's tons of tax advantages. There's the cash flow piece. There's the appreciation piece. There's just so many different ways that ultimately you can turn that $200,000 into some kind of multiple on that $200,000 that you're borrowing. That's the way that I think about an asset. A liability would be anything else that doesn't make you money ultimately. So if you're going out and using a $200,000 loan from your brokerage account and buying, let's say a Porsche, right? You're buying a beautiful Porsche. Maybe it appreciates a little bit. I don't know much about Porsche appreciation, but likely it's going to depreciate. You're really just buying something that ultimately is never going to make money for you. Now, the caveat being, there are things that look like liabilities that might not be liabilities, right? So Ronak and I have talked about yachts, right? Everybody loves a good yacht. Yachts seem like a liability. However, depending on how you use that yacht, it may actually be an asset for you. So Ronak, I think you might want to jump in on this. But if you think about it, if you buy a yacht that you use 2 weeks in the summer in the Mediterranean and you rent it out the rest of the time in the Mediterranean to other rich people that want to have a yacht experience, and let's say you make some money on it, that's no longer necessarily a liability. You might actually be making money on that. Ronak, your thoughts?
Yeah. So on this podcast, we've talked about how I'm trying to live a relatively quiet, simple, humble life. So I'm not thinking about buying a yacht anytime soon like Greg is. Greg, I hope you'll let me borrow it or at least come and join you on a couple of the parties that you throw. But let me give a little bit more everyman example of what I think you're trying to say. So if I take out a loan like this against my stock account and I go buy, like you said, a Porsche, right? There's this idea that the second you drive a Porsche off the lot, it loses like 50% of its value if you try to resell it, right? So that's a liability. It's costing you money. It's costing every time you have to get your smog check done or filling up the gas or changing the tires or whatever it is. Like the value of the Porsche is probably dropping over time. Maybe you keep it in absolute pristine condition. Maybe it goes up, but let's go beyond the Porsche. And let's say you're just buying a Honda Civic. I don't think we're going to have any very quickly appreciating Honda Civics over the next 20 years. But if you take that Honda Civic and let's say you're like, I don't really want to be a physician anymore. I'm ready to retire, but I don't want to just stay at home and play golf all day. What happens if I go and take that Honda Civic that I just bought and start driving around and doing Uber or Lyft, right? You otherwise would not have been making any money, but you turn that Honda Civic from a liability where it costs you into something that's generating income for you. Now, if that income that's being generated from this Honda Civic that you're driving around, picking up passengers and dropping them off is yielding more than a 6% interest rate or a 6% return compared to the loan that you're getting, this could be a great way to maintain your assets, let them continue compounding over time. And the interest payments that you're having to pay is more than taken care of by what you took out that loan for. So everything ends up being covered and you're golden.
Yeah. And I think going further with the reason that we took it out, right? So with short-term rentals, you're looking for a few different ways that you're ultimately going to make money off of that investment, right?
Maybe rattle off 4 or 5 different investments where something like this could make sense. just from a high level. Like we talked about, Airbnb rental properties might make sense. Maybe even like long-term rentals make sense too here. Going beyond real estate, does anything come to mind?
Yeah, so I think technically you're not supposed to use a pledged asset line for buying other stocks or equities, but there are other products that you can do that for.
So let's take an example that's maybe a little bit more relevant to our physician audience, right? Let's say you have been practicing as a physician for a little bit, and again, you have, let's say, a $5 million stock portfolio, and you're a little bit upset with how the hospital that you're working at is working out, and you want to go start your own practice with a couple of your buddies. It takes a little bit of money to start your own practice, right? You can't just do that out of thin air. You got to buy all the equipment. You got to get some location. You got to maybe advertise a little bit. Like, it's going to cost a little bit of money. That could be a great example of like why it might be a good idea to take out a loan in this way, as opposed to selling off assets in your $5 million portfolio. You are setting up a practice where you're hopefully going to be making income off it, where you can probably easily cover the interest rate payments that you're having to make. Another simple example could be like if somebody wants to franchise their own UPS location or their own Subway restaurant, right? Basically starting a business that is very likely to generate positive cash flow could be areas that one might want to look at this for.
Actually, that's a great point on like potentially starting your own practice. So I'm trying to figure out what would a small business loan be right now in terms of an interest rate. Just doing a quick Google search, it looks like it's like a prime rate plus 6% plus an additional 2%. It might be a fairly high interest rate. So if you do have 3, 4, 5 million in your brokerage account and you do want to go start that practice, maybe it does make sense to borrow $1.5 million, $2 million from yourself, knowing that it's an investment, right, into you. That's, I think, one of the other things that if you can't bet on yourself, nobody else will. That's always something that I've said since like high school. And yeah, that's actually another interesting way that I hadn't thought about because I'm no longer a practicing physician. But for those that are in the audience, yeah, if you do have that kind of cash or that kind of stock portfolio, yeah, that does make an interesting potential investment into yourself. If, yeah, you're burnt out from being a hospital employee or working in a private practice where you're not a partner or something, where you want to open up your own shop and hang your own shingle. That makes sense, right? If you're paying a lower interest rate using your own brokerage account and you don't have to sell your stocks, that makes a ton of sense also. Yeah, I like that example, actually. One of the other things that I really want to go over is why you wouldn't use your brokerage account to create these loans. So the one thing you really need to think of is you get this potential 70% loan to value of your brokerage account that you can pull out. The problem is in today's world where we don't know if we're going up or down or sideways, whatever it's going to be in terms of how the market goes for the next few years, you don't want to pull out 70%. The reason being is if you fall under that loan to value mark, so if you pull out 70% and your stock portfolio goes down 10%, you're going to get something called margin called, which basically means the brokerage account will go in and sell some of your securities to basically get you back under that 70% loan to value ratio. And they can do that automatically. They don't need your permission. They can just do it. So keep that in mind when you're using something like this, is you do not want to go crazy to the point that if the stock market moves 5 or 10%, that you're going to be margin called. You just don't want that to happen. The other thing that you can think of, though, is, you know, if you do get up to 60, 70%, you better have a way in your mind that you're going to be able to put more capital into that brokerage account to continue growing it, to make sure that you get that more down to like 45 or 50% loan to value ratio. So that was actually one of the questions that I had for the Schwab guy. I was like, you're saying that I never have to pay this off and I can just keep putting capital into it. And as it grows, you can borrow more if you wanted to. So if that initial $3 million brokerage account or $2 million brokerage account in 10 years hits 10 million, and it's like you could actually borrow up to 7 million if you wanted to. Again, I wouldn't go that high, but it literally just keeps compounding, right? Which is the reason you don't want to sell your stocks in order to pay for something, is because you lose out on all that compounding like we talked about earlier. I would urge you to consider looking into this. Again, this is not financial advice, it's financial education, but I think it's an important topic, especially for physicians that do have brokerage accounts.
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember that this is a unique form of leverage, right, that one's taking out. And I think my boy Warren Buffett said it best, that if you know what you're doing, you don't need leverage. And if you don't know what you're doing, you have no business using leverage. So I think it is a good idea to be relatively cautious with this. But I think what we're really highlighting here is that if you can be a little bit cautious with it, do your homework on these type of loans, it can, again, have a very profound impact on how you're living your life. Just by going with what the conventional wisdom is to sell your assets to buy other assets, right? There could be more creative ways to go about this to get fantastic compounding results. So definitely do think that this is something that we should double click on and folks should just think about actually doing.
Yeah. And again, I would say if you're interested in this topic, just Google buy, borrow, die to start to understand how that actually works, especially if you have kids out there. One of the things that I'm still looking into is like building trust. So we can talk about that later in the future. And also we can talk about a lot of other ways that you can pass off your wealth to your kids, hopefully tax-free, in a lot of different ways that I'm starting to look into. We'll do an entire episode on that. We'll do an entire episode on short-term rentals, tax advantages, and all that kind of stuff. But definitely look up buy, borrow, die, at least understand what that means and whether or not the brokerage account that you have even has that available. And then also, what is their interest rate spread? Like, just ask your broker, like, start to understand what these options are. Because again, it's honestly pretty easy to move brokerage accounts. You literally can just move the entire thing. I did it in a week and I started borrowing against that account when I needed to buy those assets that we were looking to buy without, again, selling our stock. And actually, the last thing I'll say is I made a mistake, right? So one of the mistakes that I made when we learned about this was we have a Catskills Airbnb rental, and now we have an Adirondack one. With the Catskill house, we used our brokerage account and we took out enough money to basically purchase the house outright with quote unquote cash. I would not do that again. It's a little over $1 million house that we bought. And we used the brokerage account, the loan, to pay for the entire thing. I would have spread that out amongst multiple houses and just gotten traditional mortgages had I thought more about it. So that $1 million purchase could have gone into 5 different $1 million homes that I could have purchased, and we could be cash flowing a lot more. So that's one of the mistakes I've made. Relatively easy to fix that mistake in the future. If we ever get a really good offer on that house, I can always sell it and use that additional capital. Now, the question I have, Ronak, is, if I sell that house, let's say we sell it for 1.5, we make 500K on the appreciation plus how it's cash flowing and all that. Do you think that I should put that capital back into the brokerage account and not pay off the loan and just let the loan sit there, meaning that I would have increased the amount in my brokerage account by 1.5 million? Or should I pay off the loan and only increase by 500,000, how much I actually have in my brokerage account? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it really comes down to how conservative you want to be and how aggressive you want to be. If you want to be more aggressive, just getting more cash in the brokerage account and let that compound and compound, the math works for itself. Why not let things just grow as much as you can over the course of your lifetime? But I understand that the need to be a little bit cautious. So I think my answer to you would be like, why not do a little bit of 50-50 both? Why not split the difference?
So I've actually thought about this quite a bit. So I think what I would ultimately do is, if we did, let's say again, we sold it for 1.5 million, I would put that 1.5 million into, thoughts? Jeppy. So Jeppy is, again, something we've talked about in the past, where it's a distribution and dividend yielding ETF, right? That you get about 11.69% on. So far, so good. It hasn't dropped. It hasn't, you know, actually has gone up since I bought it. I think it's up 2% total. It's not something that's likely going to appreciate over time, like the S&P 500. Again, it's much more about yielding income for the people that hold it. So if I added another 1.5 million to my Jeppy account, that would be able to far and away pay the monthly bill of that 6% interest rate for the rest of my life. So that's kind of the way that I think about it, is I would probably not pay off the loan, let it ride, and just let Jeppy pay for that interest on that, which is also tax deductible, by the way, and just let it ride and let the compounding happen. And then honestly, I would probably try to get as much into Jeppy as possible, take that additional income that is flowing over after paying that interest rate and throw it into something like a QQQ or something else that's likely going to grow within the stock market rather than just give you 11 point something percent yield.
So Greg, we've talked about Jeppy a couple times. We should at some point do an entire episode going through the details of covered calls and how this all works and just explaining why you're pretty excited about Jeppy. Okay, so Greg, you are making a strong case for taking out a loan against a stock account as long as it's going into a asset that is yielding at a very nice clip. You've done a good job with their Airbnb properties. For a future episode, let's definitely double click on that also and just go through a little bit more of the math of how Airbnbs work, maybe even some of the operations about like how somebody that's never been a landlord before, right? How can they get into the space? How can they take advantage of the different opportunities that are out there? And just maybe some of the lessons learned. Would you be up for an episode like that?
Yeah, we can definitely do something like that. I'll give a quick tease. So we bought the Catskills house in June of 2022. We got it up and running within 4 or 5 weeks. So I think the first guest stayed in July. So from July until December 31st, I think we made like $55,000 off of it. This calendar year, so January 1 through December 31st, we have about $200,000 in gross bookings right now for that one property. It looks like it'll probably eventually get to around 230, 240 is my guess for the calendar year, which is not bad for kind of the first full year of rentals. And so I can go over, yeah, how we think about investment properties and what we ultimately want the returns to look like. I think that would be definitely a full, probably like hour long episode that we would have to do on that. But yeah, that'll be the quick tease is yes. All right. I think that's enough on buy, borrow, die, using your brokerage account rather than spending your stocks, which you have spent a long time accumulating. We might as well keep them. Hopefully we've convinced you of that with some of the calculations from the good old compounding interest calculator. Again, if you find this content helpful, we would love to hear from you. We actually got an email from one physician that was honestly a really nice email about the content that we're creating and producing. If you do find this helpful, please leave us a review on whichever podcast player you're using and give us some kind of rating. It helps us get to more people, get to more physicians out there that are interested in the same topics. All right. We'll see you next time on the Physician Syndicate Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate Podcast.